Yo, technology, what is it all about?
I have a theory as well that the Bay Area is such a boring place that you can meet anyone.
that's a good theory.
Like, if you look at like New York or London, it's very stratified. Everyone's in their circles. But in the Bay Area, if you're just like fun to hang out with, you could go on a hike with the Sam Altmans of the world or all sorts of interesting people, just because everyone is very open to meeting new people. And I think everyone is so bored that they're open to it as well.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley. We are back, and yes, we're talking about AI with one of these program's favorite guests. Josh Browder is back. Josh, as you may recall, is the founder of Do Not Pay, a robot lawyer, as he termed it when he invented it all the way back in 2015. And Do Not Pay basically started as a template generator. So Josh had gotten a bunch of parking tickets when he was a teenager and living in the UK. So he created this bot that would generate kind of form letters and make it really easy to fight the local authority, find chinks in the armor, and get things overturned. And he turned this into a business. He got a bunch of funding. But obviously, a lot has changed in the years that have passed since he first started this thing. He came out here for Stanford. He lived in the same house in Palo Alto where Mark Zuckerberg first landed. He raised $24 million for Do Not Pay from a bunch of, you know, prominent investors out here. And he's branched into a ton of other areas. And it's all about making it easier for people to fight back. So you pay Do Not Pay, and then you can have it, you know, try to adjust your bills, get out of your gym memberships, try to kind of kill subscriptions when they make it really hard. All of this stuff, it kind of does it for you. And really, the whole idea is to kind of create a machine to make sure you're not getting screwed. Anyway, I wanted to have Josh back on, who now at the ripe age of 27 has been at this for a decade or so. And he's up to some interesting stuff, not least he just paid his investors a $1 million dividend, which, to be clear, does not happen. The whole venture capital startup machine is predicated on raising tons of money, burning through it to build a product, grab as much market share as you can, and profits are really kind of secondary at best. And often they're never achieved. I'll bring up the example in our conversation of Reddit, which was founded 19 years ago and has yet to turn profit. And they just went public, worth billions of dollars. This is the way it works. So Do Not Pay, this kind of small little company that Josh has run, is profitable. It's paying its investors kind of basically because they want to. They don't have to. It's just really interesting. And so it just speaks to kind of how Josh approaches this whole game very differently. So I wanted to have him on to talk about why he decided to give that back, how he has built this business that is worth $250 million with seven people, seven staff members, and seven contractors, but seven full-time staff. And of course, what is happening with AI? How is it changing their business and every business, and why we are all going to need, according to him, our own AI agent, our own kind of personal assistant on our shoulder, basically to make sure that we are not getting screwed by all the corporate bots that are being built right now that are going to get better and better at negotiating, selling us stuff we don't want, making it hard to get out of the things that we don't know we're signing up for, etc. All the ways that, you know, companies work hard on to kind of separate us from our money. So it's always really fun to have Josh on to kind of catch up with him. So, and I think you're going to enjoy this because, again, he takes a different approach and he speaks clearly and plainly about all this stuff. He's just a fun guest to have on. So here he is, Josh Browder, the founder of Do Not Pay. Enjoy. You've been on the pod a couple times at least over the years, and I saw a story earlier this year, or I don't know how long ago it was now, about your dividend, which I want to talk about, which is just really unique, let's say, in startup land. Perhaps we could start where you're talking about with this kind of AI moment? Because you've been not doing AI per se. It's more start out with like kind of templates to help people like fight parking tickets and basically just handle various bits of drudgery in life with this automated robot lawyer. What does the world look like for you today, given where we are with all these kind of very powerful tools that are being rolled out?
In the AI era, it feels like we're making years worth of progress every few months. I think there's this expression in technology where you want to skate where the puck is going. And I feel like that's very much what Do Not Pay did. We started out as a template business to help people get out of their parking tickets. And you can do a lot with templates, as we've proven. But what's really exciting now is we feel like we can level up our products a lot more with AI. So one thing we're really excited about that we just launched is AI bill negotiation, for example.
So how does that work?
AI will log into someone's utility account, for example, Comcast, and start chatting with the big company to lower their bill. And what's interesting is the big companies are sometimes using AI. We're using AI. And so the two AIs are battling it out. And we're more motivated in building our technology, so our AIs tend to have the upper hand.
And so how does that work? So if I, you know, I have Comcast, I have PG&E, I have all of these services, I could say, all right, Do Not Pay, go to work on Comcast, get my bill lower. You know, does it threaten to leave, like all the kind of, you know, the classic tropes you use to try to get a better deal? Or like, how does it work?
It's polite, but very firm. So yes, it threatens to leave, threatens to switch to a competitor. And it also uses publicly available data in the upper hand for the negotiation. So for example, it will look for internet outages and it will say, last week I had an internet outage and it was really important to me to have internet. So please give me a discount.
I should definitely be using this then, because we've had two outages in the past month. It's been terrible.
Yeah. What's exciting is that if the negotiation fails, AI doesn't have anything else to do. So it can just start a new negotiation and start a new chat. So it plays an infinite game to win eventually. And it wears them down.
Right. And is this actually working? Do you have any sense of how well these kind of the AI bill negotiation is going?
We were testing it for a while. We launched it a month ago, and we're now processing thousands of bills every week. And it's working extremely well. I think about 85% of the time it gets some sort of discount. What we've seen is as the AI models have been improving, the bill negotiation has been getting better. So we tested this first with GPT-3, which is OpenAI's kind of model that launched with ChatGPT, and Comcast would say, I'll give you $10 off. And GPT-3 would say, sounds good, thank you so much. But with GPT-4, it says, no, I want $100 off or I'm leaving right now. So the AI models are getting a lot better at being aggressive and getting results for people.
Right. Well, that kind of really gets to what you did recently, which was pay a dividend. So I want to get into a bit of the nitty-gritty of that, but if you just step back and say kind of what did you actually do and why'd you do it?
So we, just like with public companies, we paid a dividend to the Do Not Pay shareholders, which means that if you own 1% of Do Not Pay shares, you get 1% of the dividend. And the reason we were able to do that is because we're fortunate. We're only actually 7 full-time employees and 7 contractors, but we have hundreds of thousands of paying subscribers. And so we're fortunate to have a good business. And I really think two things combined to make us want to pay the dividend. The first is that employees and investors are tired of money-losing companies. Meta, the public company, paid its first dividend recently, and I think that's a sign of the times. And the second thing is that with AI, you can actually build really large businesses with very small teams. So you see companies like Midjourney, they have $400 million of revenue, but only under 20 employees. And we looked at these two market trends and we thought it would be nice to be part of that and reward some of our earliest believers.
I'm sure you've seen this going around the internet, one of these things. It's a little tidbit, a little soundbite from Sam Altman of OpenAI saying, you know, we have this bet around how long it's going to be before we have a one-person $1 billion company. Do you buy that that is a thing? And that, and if you were in that betting pool, what would be your bet?
I would agree. And that's our ultimate goal. Maybe not one person. As I mentioned, we're seven people and we're valued at $250 million. So we still have a long way to go. But it's definitely closer to being possible than it was a few years ago. You think about all of these functions within a company like customer support. Klarna managed to replace 60% of their customer support workload with AI. So we're definitely moving in that direction. And I think it will happen in the next 20 years.
The ability to pay a dividend. I mean, I think it's really interesting because we're starting to see maybe just the IPO window cracking. You had Reddit go out, a couple other companies, Astera Labs. They're all losing money. And this is, you know, Reddit's been around since 2006, I believe. So nearly 20 years old. Do you think we are entering a new phase where basically it's going to be easier to make money, or and or investors are going to be less tolerant of loss-making companies? And I'm asking because, you know, we've had 1,000+ AI startups funded. A lot of them are toys. They don't work very well. I just think it's a really interesting time when we're looking at some of these dynamics.
I agree with your second point, which is that investors are really tired of it. And I think there's this myth in Silicon Valley where you have to lose a lot of money to get very big. But I think that myth has only been recently true. When Facebook was raising their first serious round of funding, their Series A, they were actually a profitable business. They only became unprofitable because they wanted to grow a lot. But that has created a sort of excuse for companies to just be fundamentally bad businesses. And they only find out when they go public. And I think we're in a new paradigm now where people are waking up and realizing that's not a good business. And call me old fashioned, but the purpose of a business is to do well by its shareholders, not to light money on fire.
But that's been the business model, right? That has been the model of Silicon Valley, is to light large mountains of money on fire. And it's actually seems to kind of work for at least certain vested interests. If you're talking about venture capitalists, like, yeah, we can fund this loss-making company. And as long as it goes IPOs or it gets bought by somebody, we don't care if it's actually, as you say, a bad business.
It can be true where there's a fundamental technical breakthrough. Like you look at OpenAI. OpenAI seemed like a research project, almost seemed like it should have been a nonprofit government entity. But now OpenAI is doing billions in revenue because they've made a fundamental breakthrough. So if it's something truly technical, like something sending rockets to space, then I think it might work. And that's true venture capital. But if you're selling subscription software, you should be more profitable than a company launching rockets.
Yeah, that seems fair. That seems fair. What I'm struggling with, I'll be honest, is, you know, I've written a lot about generative AI and what's happening right now. And it does feel like the internet is full of really impressive demos. But with the actual product often seems to fall way short. And, you know, there's problems with it. They hallucinate. They're not reliable. All of these things, they're slow. Whatever it may be, it feels like we're entering this new phase. If you think about the hype cycle, you know, the peak of inflated expectations, it feels like we're getting near this point. We're going to come down the other side and kind of realize that a lot of this stuff is, they're just toys. They don't work. They're not, there's no business there.
I agree. I think that a lot of money will be lost in generative AI investments. I think that every company is an AI company. AI is like cloud. You can't be a cloud company. You either have a website or you don't. And so AI will benefit businesses that are already working and already have distribution. Like Notion can just launch an AI writing tool because they already have the customers using it. And I'm biased, but I think Do Not Pay is in a good position because we already have this business for fighting back with templates where we're adding AI. But all these demos where it'll be a new company just because there's AI, I don't think that will really work. And I think a lot of money will disappear in that as well.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
And so what are you doing? Because you're running Do Not Pay, but you also do your own investing. I talked to, I think it was Keith Raboy, we had him on a few months ago, and he was talking about the joy of missing out, to that point around, like, there's just a lot of heat and light, and it's not clear what's real and what isn't, and, you know, they're just kind of sitting on the sidelines mostly when it comes to AI. What are you, or how are you approaching it?
I'm most excited by boring software companies founded by really smart, often high school or college dropouts with everything to lose. And they're not chasing the hype cycle. They're just automating these boring industries, often software first, and then they're adding AI on top of it. I'm actually staying away from all of the hype. And I've been in the industry now for 10 years. I'm 27, so I'm getting old. I started my company when I was 17.
Very old. Very, very old. Yes. I've been out here now for 7+ years. And one of the first features I wrote was on you, and you were still living at the old Mark Zuckerberg house in Palo Alto.
That's right. And I remember when we first met on the Facebook couch, and I've seen the crypto hype. And actually, I've been working on this for so long, I've actually seen chatbots go through two cycles now. Because when we first met at the Facebook house, chatbots was actually an extremely hot area of tech. And now they are again. From my experience, I actually don't think consumers like chatting so much. If you think about booking a hotel, personally, I would much rather see the hotel room's photos of the room and click a button than talk to a robot. So I think the user interface is also very overhyped, and the best AI, it just works behind the scenes and you don't even know it's AI.
No, I agree with that. Every time there's a company that I'm using, they're like, do you want to chat right now? Or a chat window pops up. I'm just like, I can't deal. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, and they have to include that so they can say to their board, we are using generative AI, we're so exciting. But I think people still like clicking buttons.
Yeah. And so what is the kind of the plan for Do Not Pay? Because obviously the founding story, we've covered it here before, but it was, you know, you got a bunch of parking tickets. So you created this kind of bot that would kind of spit out various templates to make it really easy to fight parking tickets. And then you expanded those services to a whole bunch of other different verticals. What's the path forward? I mean, you're only 7 people. What are you trying to do, or where are you going?
We really think that growth and profitability are not mutually exclusive. So we're looking to actually potentially even acquire some companies with our profits, build really exciting new products. We have new stuff coming out every week. I think this week we're launching a phone unlock service. So a lot of these carriers, they say you have to stick to AT&T, you have to stick to Verizon, the US carriers. But there are all these rules where you can get your phone unlocked. So we're launching that, for example. And a lot of these great features help a lot of people, but they can't be standalone companies. So by adding them to our suite of products, it becomes more and more useful for people to subscribe to Do Not Pay. And I'm biased, but I think everyone could benefit from Do Not Pay. So we're looking to capture the entire US market. And we have rich people use our product, poor people. Everyone can loves fighting back.
The entire US market, meaning like every person.
Yeah, and we're working on some really exciting partnerships to make that happen. Should have some exciting stuff in the next few months to announce around that.
Right. And just so, just on the numbers, so you're 7 full-time people, 7 contractors, you're profitable. You've raised what, $25 million over the, since you founded the company?
We've raised $24 million.
And how much do you have in the bank now?
We don't want to, because we're trying to acquire companies and things, so we don't want to reveal exactly how much, but we have more than 24, more than we've raised.
Right, right. Which again is in startup land, difficult. I'm wondering that, so those 7 people, are they here? Are you remote? Because that's another big kind of meta trend that seems to be happening is, you know, post COVID, people are like, well, we're just going to find the best talent regardless of where they are. And oftentimes, if they're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, they're a lot cheaper.
We're together. We just like, we're like a pod. We travel around and we're exploring where to be, but we're in person. We have a few people abroad. We have 2 people in Canada, but apart from that, mostly in person.
Got you. And so you're back in San Francisco. You were talking about, I think when we spoke last, you were talking about maybe opening an office in Miami. Miami was having a moment then. As you said, you were in New York, you were in London. So why are you back in San Francisco right now?
The serendipity of being in San Francisco is off the charts. Like I walk down the street on Market Street and it's a bit dangerous. And I bump into like a leading AI engineer and can grab coffee with him or her and try and recruit them or bump into other startup friends and they give me ideas. And a lot of this stuff happens not because it's scheduled, but just because you're here and you're bumping into and meeting the right people. I have a theory as well that the Bay Area is such a boring place that you can meet anyone.
that's a good theory.
Like if you look at like New York or London, it's very stratified. Everyone's in their circles. But in the Bay Area, if you're just like fun to hang out with, you could go on a hike with the Sam Altmans of the world or all sorts of interesting people just because everyone is very open to meeting new people. And I think everyone is so bored that they're open to it as well.
I think there's some legs to that theory, actually, especially in like the valley, like south of San Francisco, like San Mateo, Palo Alto, Sunnyvale, that whole zone. I mean, it's just a sea of office parks.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like the only thing to do is talk about AI, and that has its advantages and disadvantages. The advantages are it's incredibly intellectually stimulating. I feel like people grow as individuals. The disadvantages, there's no dating scene or anything like that. So it depends what one is focused on.
Yeah. And so, when did you start the company? Was it 10 years ago?
I created the service in 2015 and incorporated it in 2016 as a company.
Right, right, right. What's the biggest mistake you've made?
I would say there's two big mistakes I made. The first was not being courageous enough to charge people until 4 years in. Before 2019, when we launched the subscription, it was basically a free public service. There were no ads, no paid model or anything like that. And that's when I think the business really took off. And I wish I was courageous enough to move more quickly with the business earlier. And then the second mistake, I think, is in earlier interviews and on Twitter, I said like these crazy things. Like, I want to like replace all lawyers and things like that.
I remember those tweets.
And another thing I said was we pay $1 million to anyone who use AI in the Supreme Court and all of this. And I think that was good in helping people imagine what's possible with this technology. But at the same time, I think I've made a lot of enemies and it's not good to make enemies. So I'm trying to be more collaborative.
So what is it, if you're stepping back, and I know that the origin was like the quote unquote, the robot lawyer, but what you're really doing was kind of templates. What is your view on AI in the legal world now? Because again, there's a lot of hype around, oh, this is really good at kind of replacing difficult cognitive work. And whether that's true or not is to be determined. But I'm interested, given that you've been kind of especially in the kind of the legal weeds for years, how you see where things are at the moment.
I think that no one has time to wait on hold for $40 for 3 hours with Comcast. And that's the perfect job for AI. AI is not going to be helping defend people in court anytime soon. But it is really perfect at jumping through these hoops that no one has time to jump through. And I think that's the value proposition of do not pay. And I think that's what we want to communicate. So all of these enemies of like replacing lawyers, I don't think it will be replacing lawyers, but I think it will be replacing fighting Comcast and saving people lots of money. And I think that everyone deserves to have an AI agent on their shoulders fighting back, because unless you're like me, no one has the time to or the energy to assert their rights.
Well, as you say, as this stuff gets more prevalent, there's a world where I can see you kind of needing an AI agent, because to your point, like your AI agent is more persistent, it's more aggressive than the kind of customer service ones, but there's going to become a world where they too will get better, more canny, better at negotiating, et cetera. And then you're just even more stuck in this spiral of time wasting, unless you can just outsource it to your own AI to kind of just like look after your interests.
And I actually think we might need some laws to protect the AI agents, because...
To protect the AI agents?
Yeah. So I think there's going to be two types of AI. There's what I call positive sum AI. So if you think about the Expedia booking a flight with them with AI, you win because you can book the flight with AI, and Expedia wins because they get the revenue from the ticket with you booking it. And so that's one type of AI. But another type of AI is called adversarial AI, where what the AI is doing for you is not in the interests of the receiving party. And an example of that would be like AI to cancel your gym membership. The gym is not going to let an AI do that because they don't want you to cancel your membership. So we need to protect the AI. It's almost like endangered species to allow it to do these things. And there are actually already laws that do this. So there's a law in California, the California Consumer Privacy Act, and it explicitly says it allows agents to assert privacy on your behalf. So I think similarly, we need it for other consumer rights, like credit laws that say the AI can help dispute your credit report. Otherwise, the companies are not going to let this happen.
Yeah, I just think it's an interesting world, yeah, because especially in a world where, you know, it's already death by kind of hold music, or the kind of the circular arguments you get in here, especially when you just, that is machines doing that, we lose. In other words, we have to outsource it. We're going to have to outsource it as this gets more developed.
Yeah, and society will become more efficient.
I take it you're not buying the fear-mongering, oh my God, this is the end of civilization as we know it. We're all going to be subsisting off universal basic income because all the machines are going to do all the meaningful work.
So the way ChatGPT works is they've taken every book, every article from the Times, every website, and they fed it into this big statistical model. And ChatGPT is predicting what word should come next when you ask it a question. And that's good. It can produce a lot of useful stuff. It's good for negotiating with Comcast, but it can't reason. And I asked ChatGPT to add up 5 numbers recently, and it got the answer wrong. And so if it can't even add up 5 numbers correctly, it's still quite a long way from being AGI Terminator style. And so when they improve these models, all they're doing is they're adding new data into the statistical model to make it a bigger data set. And now they've actually run out of data, so they're actually creating fake data to feed the AI because it's so hungry. But the reason I mention this is I think we need a fundamental technical breakthrough to take us to the next level. And I'm confident we'll get there. There's so much money being invested in the space, but it's not like it's just going to keep getting better on its own. And we do need one of those breakthroughs to get us to this AGI level style that we've all feared and been promised.
The other interesting aspect here, and I'd love to get your view, is I was on the phone last week with Databricks, and they made this big announcement that said, we've created our own LLM like, you know, GPT 3.5 or GPT 3 or whatever it was. And they said, where it says good or better than GPT 3.5, which was the LLM that powered ChatGPT when it was launched. And it cost them $10 million to train and took them 2 months to do it. And OpenAI has never said what exactly they spent on GPT 3.5, but I've heard $100 to $200 million. And their whole argument is we're getting so much better and the hardware is getting so much better that the cost to train AI is going to come down by 4x every year. And at least this, the kind of future that I see where it's like becomes like ambient, like it's just AI is going to be everywhere because it's going to be like almost like electricity. It's so cheap. It's a commodity. And then you're building all these services on top of it. And Databricks built this thing that is 5% the cost of what OpenAI did 2 years ago. Do you see that, how it playing out that way, what I just laid out?
I think so. And so rather than this AGI future, to your point, it will be this ambient future where it's just useful in every aspect. But it's not 100% good, because if it's so cheap, then the criminals start using it. And they already are. Yep. Where one's grandma gets a call and says, "Grandma, can you send me money?" And it sounds like me or someone else, but it's not. It's actually AI and a criminal. And I think this is the sad part about new technology. It typically gets in the hands of the criminals and the big companies to rip people off first, and then trickles down to the people. And that's our mission, to give power back. I said I'm getting old, but I remember the days when if you dress nicely to the airport, you might get an upgrade. Now it's AI decide that. So I think it could make the world worse in some aspects as well.
For sure. But that's your whole mission, right? Is to kind of be the force for good.
Yeah.
And hopefully you're 27. Now you're back in the Bland Bay area. Sad dating scene. Hopefully, you know, you can find some lively corners, at least to make the rest of your life more interesting.
One can hope. Yes.
And that is all the time we have. I want to thank Josh for coming on. I want to thank you all for listening, and the ratings and the reviews and your support for all these years of this fine podcast. I may be writing about this week, but I know I'm doing a bunch of stuff for the paper. I'm kind of running around like a chicken with its head cut off this week, but do check out thetimes.co.uk to see what I am up to this weekend and what all my other brilliant colleagues are up to. So do check that out. You can also find me on Twitter at Danny Fortson. And that is it for me this week. We'll be back next week with another fabulous episode. Got a really fun guest next week, so do make sure you tune into that. And that is all for me. Thank you. Take care and talk soon. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.